Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino with you. 201-939-4513. We'll take your calls throughout the program. We'll take them a little bit later, more so than early, because in a few minutes we'll have Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. Kind of get somebody else's take. I'm sure you're sick of hearing from me, Paul, and Lance over the past few weeks. So try to get a new voice on here, kind of talk about where the Giants are. We're not going to revisit, you know, what the Giants should have done with the draft, with the quarterback and Barkley. We're through that. We talked about it for 3 months, so I don't want to revisit that. I kind of want to look forward now and kind of see what's next with – you kind of have an idea of what the team looks like, rookie minicamp coming, and that's kind of what we're going to address with Paul.
Yeah, right now the Giants have 81 players on their roster going into the rookie minicamp, which opens tomorrow. They are allowed 90, as you guys know, by the time they get through the summer and they open up training camp in the end of July.
And that does include the drafted players, correct, in that 81?
The 81 includes the six draft picks, because it's my belief that the six draft picks will be on the 90.
Correct.
I mean, unless somebody fails a physical.
My point is that even though the contracts aren't technically signed, they are on that roster to 81.
I'm considering them as 81. Now, if you want to take those six off, it's 75.
No, I hear you.
You know, but the point is, that does leave quite a bit of wriggle room for undrafted rookie free agents to at least get an opportunity to sign for training camp.
Yeah, of course, and we'll see when the Giants announce their undrafted free agent signings. That hasn't happened yet. We hope to get it before practice starts tomorrow, so we have a roster, so you know who's wearing what
you
number.
You have to.
I know
they can't practice unless they're signed.
I'm just kidding. And, of course, the rookies arrive much later on today, and then rookie minicamp on Friday and Saturday. We'll have coverage of that for you right here on Giants.com to talk about that and everything else going on with the New York Football Giants. Is Paul Schwartz. He's covered the Giants for the New York Post. I believe he is the senior most person on the beat these days. I'm not counting you, Paul. I know you're the most senior. I'm not trying to take any.
I'm a dinosaur is what I am.
I know that.
I'm not even a person.
See,
I'm a fossil.
See, now, I would call you a fossil, and I would call Paul the dinosaur. Paul, how are you?
Fossil? Are we talking about Jim Fossil? What?
That's actually the one coach Jeff Cole Paul doesn't want to talk about. All right, Paul, you know, we've kind of rehashed the draft a million times, six ways from Saturday. So let's move past that. The team in general, and let's start with the big picture thing first. When you take a look at this roster, what part of it, position, side of the ball, you can go whatever way you want, makes you kind of crinkle your forehead and go, that worries me a little bit?
Well, I think my focus would definitely go towards the defensive side of the ball. And it seems to me at this point the Giants are putting a lot on James Betcher and his scheme to kind of figure it out, okay? Figure out how we're going to get pressure with your scheme, with your deployment of personnel, because we have not given you certainly the juice and the talent that Pat Shurmur has on the offensive side of the ball. You know, now look, you can't address everything with the draft and everything with free agency. They address some of that need in free agency, certainly with Alec Ogletree on defense, in free agency with Kareem Martin a little bit, with Lorenzo Carter in the draft a little bit. But I think primarily when I look at this team now, it is more of an offensive-dominated team, and it is a defense that is going to have to rely on things like almost like the way the Cowboys did it in a few years past. Less time on the field, maybe having a lead more often, and maybe using scheme to get pressure on the quarterback rather than raw ability, which they've had in the past with some of these really good Giants teams.
Yeah, and Paul, I said something similar yesterday. I want to kind of pinpoint focus on something here, because, you know, as we all well know, it's a passing league, all right? In order to win in this game, you have to either be really good at getting after the quarterback or be really good at covering on the back end. And ideally, you're good at both. And I think right now for this defense, you know, Olivier Vernon's a good pass rusher. He's never been a dominant pass rusher in terms of getting home. They traded Jason Pierre-Paul. So I wonder about your consistent ability to get to the quarterback. And then once you get past Janoris Jenkins, I think there are a lot of questions at the cornerback position as well. So if those are the two things you need to stop people, I think the Giants do have a couple significant questions in those areas.
They do, and I really think that Lorenzo Carter in the third round is a guy that's not just a, well, we drafted him and we hope he develops and plays special teams right away guy. I think he's a guy that they want to get in the pass rush.
Be nice.
Right away. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I just think, you know, that's one of those things that's one of those spots that the Giants have not hit. A mid-round pass rusher, the Demontre Moores, there's a bunch of other guys who
Odigizuwa,
guys who they said in the third, fourth round, we are taking them to be pass rushers. They have not developed. So I think Lorenzo Carter has to develop as a pass rusher almost from day one for this whole thing to work.
Or Avery Moss from last year, too, another young guy that maybe might help.
Which is still to be determined.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Last year, the Cardinals had 37 sacks. Paul Chandler Jones had 17. The Giants only had 27. So,
and by the way, the Cardinals had one of their lowest blitz percentages last year from the Betcher era because Chandler Jones was so good.
Yeah. Year before, I think they had 48 sacks.
Yeah.
So I don't know what number they're going to have. I don't necessarily put as much stock in the sack number, although I've always said you need to have about 40 to 42 sacks because that's usually indicative of what your better defenses will have. But I don't want to put it all on the sack total because, in my opinion, Paul, the Giants had a number of defensive players who underachieved last year for whatever reason you want to say, and I think it's reasonable to expect at least four or five of these guys, whether it be Jenkins, Landon Collins, Eli Apple, you can put a bunch of guys in that boat and say it's reasonable to expect that they will play a heck of a lot better than they did last season.
Yeah, I agree with that, but those players are not pass rushers. You know, you can't give me really two or three names of guys and say they underachieved as pass rushers. So I think that is, you know, to the point of getting pressure on the quarterback. Because, look, let's face it, let's turn this around and say, look at the Giants' offense. And how is an opposing defense going to line up, spread out, okay, and stop Odell and Sterling Shepard and Engram and Barkley coming out of the backfield? Did I miss anybody?
You know, and
that whole package.
Well, Barkley,
and you say, well, they're not really going to. They're going to have to get pressure on Eli. So conversely, it's the same thing with the Giants. That you know there will be times where they will be spread out and there will be mismatches on the field because, as you said, unless Eli Apple develops into a lockdown cornerback in year number three after a fairly promising rookie year and a disaster of a second year. And, you know, William Gay in the slot, does he have enough tread on the tires to line up against one of these slot guys? So it's going to have to come from pressure up front, and that is a legitimate question mark for this team right now.
And, Paul, where's the competition coming from? I think you mentioned the three quote-unquote starting cornerbacks. I think we're all pretty confident Janoris Jenkins could be a number one guy. He can take care of his side of the field fairly well, and you'll be okay. Eli Apple, you mentioned, then William Gay in the slot. Where's competition coming for those two guys in the slot and outside where they're going to get pushed? And maybe if, you know, Gay shows his age a little bit or Apple doesn't play like he did as a rookie, that we're going to have somebody emerge and say, hey, maybe this guy can get some significant playing time.
Well, it's not coming from the draft, obviously, because
right.
They did not draft a cornerback or a safety. And it's probably not coming in, you know, free agency as far as, guys who were not drafted. Look, they signed a bunch of guys, right? They signed a bunch of stopgap, special teams players, and it's going to come from there. It just has to. Look, like I said, you cannot address everything. That is not something they addressed, in my mind, in any kind of great detail or any kind of great depth right there. And so will there be a few guys who shake out along the summer from other teams? Yes, but that's you're trading your problem for somebody else's problem. It's like I said, I think it's going to be a lot on James Betcher's plate to say,
yeah,
we like your scheme, we like your brain. This is not on paper a dominant 11-man defense across the board. You're going to have to make it work in concert with us having the ball more, time of possession, things like that, hopefully having a lead. We're going to try to get you in good situations on defense. Now you have to try to figure it out maybe with less than ideal personnel.
You know, Paul, I had said the same thing about the corners going into the draft. I thought they would be able to get a value corner at some point who would provide some more promising depth. You're looking at this depth chart now, and you're seeing B.W. Webb, Teddy Williams, of course, Dante Dion's there, Curtis Riley, Brandon Dixon. You know, these guys are like coming out of an apple cart, and you have no idea if any of these guys will emerge to be productive, reliable players. But then again, if you want to take the positive viewpoint, when they made the deal to get Ross Cockrell, who was about to get cut by the Steelers last year, I don't think that many people gave him a chance to be a significant contributor, and he turned out to be a pretty good player.
True. Look, you have to hit on a few guys, not to be superstars, but to be good third and fourth cornerbacks. And, you know, we often get criticized for focusing in on one player too often. Odell, Eli Apple. But you know what? How much of this defense is going to revolve around Eli Apple being a first-round cornerback and being a good player? They have not thrown him out, which was the smart thing to do.
Right.
You know, he's an athletic, big, strong cornerback. I defy anyone who saw him in training camp last year did not say, wow, this guy looks bigger and stronger, and he should be really good. I mean,
no
at
doubt.
This point last year, yep. The signs pointed up for Eli Apple, mm-hmm. and it all went haywire. The Giants are hoping that everything went haywire last year, and it was just one of those things with Janoris, with DRC, who's no longer there, with, you know, a less-than-great play from Landon Collins after his great year 2 years ago. And Eli Apple, look, I don't know if this is his strike three on him, but it's getting close. You know, he's 0-2 in the batter's box now, and, you know, he can only foul off pitches for so long. So he has to become a good player, the kind of player the old regime envisioned, or else this thing's not going to work.
Paul, there's no question that the depth at cornerback is a significant issue, but I'm almost a tad surprised that you didn't name the right tackle spot when John asked you the question of concern, because you really don't know, nor do I, nor does John, nor does probably anybody in the building, exactly what's going to happen to Eric Flowers. Nobody truly knows right now what he's going to be doing the first week of September of this coming year.
Well, I don't think we'll see if he's here when mandatory minicamp comes in June.
But even that won't be a guarantee,
right,
that he's going to be opening day starter week number one.
Oh, yeah. So competition.
So what does your crystal ball tell you? Is Eric Flowers starting for this team at right tackle week one, or do you suspect it's going to be Chad Wheeler? Do you think it might be somebody else? What's your take?
Well, I mean, I didn't mention that just because when you want a whole overview, I mean, I think four of the five spots on the offensive line are in pretty good shape. So,
yeah.
Look, if you do this interview with 31 other beat writers for their teams, I defy any of them to say all five spots on the offensive line are golden. You know, I have no concerns about any of them. Looking into my crystal ball, I don't see how this is going to work with Eric Flowers. First of all, just the fact that he has not been a reliable, I mean, he's been reliable as far as physically being on the field, but he has not been a good player at left tackle for 3 years. To think he's going to make an adjustment to the right side, even if he was willing and his, you know, a sound body and mind to say, I'm going to embrace this and move to the right side, with all his technique issues on the left side, which is his side of comfort, now moving him to the right side, I think was a question mark. Now you put the very questionable mental aspect of this, where he is basically, as a competitor, caving in and being upset that he's being moved and not embracing it and not really having the understanding of what this means in his career to go over to that side and show that he can play right tackle and then move on in free agency for a team that wants to sign him to one of the two tackle spots. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's mind-boggling. You know, he has an agent now, which is a good thing, I suppose. So I cannot envision him being the starter of day one because of either just the ability to do it on the field mentally. Look, you have to mentally be into it to do it, and he's certainly not. And if he comes in grudgingly, the guy's got an attitude that I would not want to invest a lot of money in right now. So, no, I do not see this all lining up and him playing well enough to win that job in the summer. I think by default it's Chad Wheeler. I don't know if there's anybody on the roster who can do it at this point. Did they pick up someone? Probably not in the summer. Look, it's a position that they're going to have to. I would think that Rhett Ellison and Jarrell Adams will find a lot of time occupied next to the right tackle this season.
Paul, how about the offensive line in general? Because I think it's an interesting dichotomy. I don't think anyone would argue that the line's not better. Nate Solder is probably better than any player that was on the line last year. You drafted a guy like Will Hernandez. But at the same time, I'm not sure I pile this group in with, the Cowboys, the Titans, the Raiders, and, offensive lines like that. So what's the expectation here? Because I think a lot of people are excited Saquon Barkley's going to come in, generational back, 1,500 yards, blah, 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 blah. Eli's going to be sitting back there for 6-7 seconds to throw the ball. What do you think the level of expectation is now for this group that the Giants have assembled on the offensive line?
I think the expectation is to be a good offensive line. Good. And then anything better than that is something we'll have to see develop. Look, Will Hernandez, we're all penciling him as a starting right guard, which I imagine he will be. But
maybe
let's
left,
remember, Chris, what's that?
I said maybe left. Who knows? It depends how they move him and Omami around.
Yes, but I mean a starting guard.
Correct.
Now let's remember, Chris Snee was a starting guard from day one, but he was not the finished product as a rookie as
right.
he was
Good
in
point.
Year. So, look, we have to expect there be some growing pains on a guy who's coming from a UTEP team that finished 0-12 last year. As much as the Giants love him, big, strong, nasty, physical, all these things, he will probably develop into a very good player, but on day one against Jacksonville, is he going to be a dominating guard? Probably not.
That's a good
point. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a work in progress with this line, but they're going from such depths of despair with this line that we didn't say they have to be the Cowboys' offensive line.
Okay.
We're saying can they be from 12 to 18
yeah.
offensive line
right.
with Eli Manning being a smart, savvy quarterback with very good weapons on the outside, and now Saquon Barkley, they can be a very good offense. You can't be the worst offensive line in the league or in the top two or three, and they shouldn't be anymore.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
No, they have to be as close to the median possible, which, as you said, Paul, to me, somewhere in that 15 vicinity would be perfectly fine for them, and they can function and be what they want to be as a football team.
Yeah, will they be good enough to let the offense function the way
Shermer
wants it to function?
That's
what you're looking for.
That's it.
Yeah.
Will there be things that they can rely on? That's all. Not as far as lining up and dominating. Okay, that's probably not going to happen.
Right.
Certainly not right away, but can they rely on the left tackle being left out on an island? Okay,
well,
in years past they could not. Now they hope they can be. Now you can slide your protection to the other side. There are just things that you have to rely on that, 80% of the time work. And then you have an offense you can build around.
Well, Paul, and that really shows itself big time in when you're trying to run a four-minute offense. I mean, no part of the playbook is more further exposed than the four-minute offense when your offensive line is a mess. And the Giants think they've improved the running game with Barkley. They believe they've improved the offensive line with the moves we've made. So, therefore, that four-minute offense should suddenly become a new chapter in the playbook again, where they actually have an opportunity to hold on to a lead and do something with the clock, which they haven't been able to do for a while.
Well, and who is the greatest proponent of the four-minute offense? It is James Betcher, okay? Because now his defensive guys are standing on a sideline, and he's talking to them saying, guys, we got to be ready. We got to make one last stand here. We got to make one last stand. You guys be ready. And they're all nodding their heads. And meanwhile, Barkley's getting three, and then Jonathan Stewart's getting four, and then Barkley's getting three, and then there's another first down. And then Betcher's going, guys, okay, we got to be ready. We got to be ready. And someone's saying, coach, look up. There's 30 seconds to go in the game. We're not getting back on the field. That
exactly.
is what a good team does. And so, yes, I think this is all part of the plan for the Giants. If they're thinking if we could not solidify the back end of the defense, if we could not get a stud pass rusher, we traded JPP. We know that could maybe weaken us in the short term just as far as getting pressure on the quarterback, that now we can play that kind of chemistry football where we don't have to throw the defense out there for three series in the fourth quarter and say, bail us out.
And we're joined by Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. And, Paul, the other thing that kind of drove me nuts a little bit, and I understand there are reasons for it over the last, 2-3 years, the Giants stopped being a big play offense, especially in balls thrown down the field. Odell would turn some slants into long runs and scores and all that stuff. But I always felt Eli Manning's greatest strength wasn't the fact that he was always the same guy every series or every week in, week out. One week he'd look bad, and the next week he'd look great. But he would always make big plays and big throws. And I felt like he wasn't put in a situation enough the last couple years where he could make those big throws down the field to make big plays. And if you talk to the analytic guys, big plays win games. And the Giants have been near the bottom of the league in plays over 20 yards the last two or three years. Do you think with the help on the offensive line, the arrival of Saquon Barkley, a new offense under Pat Shurmur, this Giants team can go back to making some big plays through the air, something that I think has been sorely lacking?
Well, they're going to have to because that's, as you mentioned, that's what Eli does best. Look, I talked to Eli the other day at an event and mentioned the play-action pass. And he said, you know, Eli doesn't rip anybody or anything. And he said, well, yeah, the last couple of years it was, you know, I forget what he said exactly, but you can tell he was thinking, yeah, no kidding. The last couple of years it was irrelevant, the play-action pass, because when I turned around and did the play fake, the defense was like yawning, you know, saying, no, we're not buying that you're going to hand the ball to this guy because this guy's not going to get any yards against us. So, you know, Eli has always been a very good downfield thrower, as you said. There's no question about it. And look, under Ben McAdoo, with the failings of the offensive line, this was literally get the ball to Odell and hope he breaks one. And you know, it's no way to run an offense. And you know, as much as everyone wanted to run Ben McAdoo out of town and he didn't do himself a lot of favors, is, you know, it was, you know, pretty much football malpractice what the offensive line turned into with Ben McAdoo as the head coach. I defy anyone to run a cohesive offense knowing you have to do so much to mitigate against pressure, against, you know, looking down the field, against holding the ball for long. I mean, really, it was not an NFL caliber offensive line, certainly last year. And yeah, the big play should be back. And then once Odell went out, there was basically no offense to watch at all.
Paul, in honor of Jeff Fiegels, I want to turn the conversation to special teams, because the Giants special teams last year did not fare very well at all. And that is an understatement. I think we are all aware of that. How do you think this is going to shake out? Do you think Rosas will win the job again for the second year in a row and kind of turn around some of his misfortune? I mean, I'm sure we all believe a veteran's going to be brought in over the summer to at least compete with him. They went and got a punter, okay, a veteran punter from Denver, so I'm sure they probably believe he's the right guy or they wouldn't have made the trade for him. And then, of course, there's the return game, which, I don't know, is Sterling Shepard right now the most accomplished punt returner they have? Probably. Is Hunter Sharp maybe the most accomplished kick returner on this roster? Probably. Where do you see that going?
Except for Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, right, if you're going to do that.
Yeah, I like the question to Shurmur when he was asked. You know, Saquon had a, you know, a 98 or 100-yard kickoff return for Penn State. What do you think of using him there? And Shurmur was like, thinking, let me think of a delicate way to say this. No.
No,
yeah. No, he's not going to be returning kickoffs. Now, you know what? If they're down by a touchdown and, you know, getting the ball, then maybe you have Odell and Saquon lined up back and you hope the guy doesn't kick it out of the end zone and maybe you try it there. But no, you know, look, I mean, I think the special teams right now is an unquestioned huge question mark. Huge. Do I think Aldrick Rosas is going to be the starting kicker on opening day? I would bet against it. You know, I mean, he had a shaky rookie year, as you would expect. He's a fastball pitcher. You know, he's got a great arm. He's got a great leg. He can kick the heck out of the ball, but he's not very consistent. There was some very troubling signs last year. I think he's a good guy. You know, is he mentally tough? I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. He didn't show great mental toughness last year, but he was a rookie. And you know, and I think you guys would agree with me. If the Giants were, you know, 9-5, 9-6 heading down the stretch, they would have replaced him with a more reliable kicker and said, look, we can't have this guy costing us games. But the season went so haywire that it didn't matter. They just figured, let's just stick with him and see what he could do. You know, the punter. You know, he was a very so-so punter in 2 years at Denver. Do I think he's going to be the punter? I'm not sure about that. I think if he has a couple of bad days in the summer or in the preseason, they'll sign somebody else. So, as you mentioned, the return game, there's nothing proven right there right now. I think it's something that there is going to be a fascinating, as fascinating as special teams can be in the summer. I think this will be, fascinating because I think kicker, punter, punt return, kick return are all open right now.
You know what's funny, though, Paul? Excuse me, John. Before you get to those numbers on Barkley, you know, the thing about it is, Hardly anybody really talks about that. And the bottom line is, this team is not going to be good enough to just blow people away, especially with some of the questions we've talked about on the depth chart.
Need field position.
So field position is going to be huge, and so are getting points every time you're in scoring range. You're not going to be able to deal with a missed 43-yard field goal that's going to leave you empty on that offensive trip. That's going to be very painful for this team. They can't afford those things. The margin of error is going to be very slim, Paul, don't you think?
Well, at this point, it has to be a huge question mark. And if you're saying, is it a positive or a negative right now, it's a negative. There's no question. I mean, you can't just assume it's going to be good. There's a new coordinator. He's like we mentioned, there could be a new punter. There's going to be a new kicker. Oh, there will be a new punter. I mean, it could be even another new one. Right, the days of saying we have, you know, Fegels and Tynes. We have Weatherford and Tynes. You know, the years of thinking, you know, we have Dominic Hixon as a return guy. You know, maybe not great, but pretty good. Reliable. We know what we have there. Those days are not here right now. There's no question about it. So that is something that this coaching staff is going to have to get right this summer. And do they have to be the best in the league? No. But you have to be good. There's no question about it. You cannot rely on lousy kicking and lousy punting and guys dropping a ball on punt returns. You know, it's mitigated this, you know, obviously. Kickoff returns are not the issues that they were because of the new rules and things like that. We know that. Punters do a much better job, usually, of getting the ball to the boundaries or kicking it out of bounds. It's not what it once was, but, you know, as what Bill Parcells always said, you can't take the foot out of football. There will be games that will be won and lost with it, and right now they are, to be kind, work in progress.
Paul Dottino here put me on the spot yesterday, had me come up with some over-under numbers for Saquon Barkley in his rookie season with the Giants. I'm going to throw out some numbers to me. You tell me if you think he's going to go over or under these numbers, okay?
Sure. Now, obviously, the most important over-under is games played, but I guess we're assuming he's going to be playing a good chunk of the year. So,
yes.
Okay.
Go for 16.
For everyone's sake, let's assume 16 games. Will he have more or less of or than 270 carries?
You see, now you're going to make me go to a calculator. Okay.
Because I did the math myself. That equals, I believe, that was 17 carries
per
game.
That's what you said.
17 rushing attempts per game?
Yes.
I will say under.
Okay. How about 1,190 yards? That came out to around 4.4 yards per carry on the 270 carries over the course of the year.
Rushing, right? What
yes.
did you say,
11 rushing
what?
1,190.
Over.
Okay. So you're going to go over 4.5 on the rushing average. 6 rushing touchdowns.
Over.
Okay. Now the receptions, and I think this is where it gets tricky.
It gets real tricky.
68.
The over under for reception should be about 90. No, okay, I'm kidding. Okay, go ahead.
68 catches.
68 divided by 16 equals 4.25. I will bet Paul Dottino's salary that it's over.
Okay.
Wow.
By the way, that is not that expensive of a bet, just FYI.
That might get you a pizza.
And then 675 receiving yards.
Let's see. Let me just do a little thing. If I 675, I say about...
Don't feel bad. This is exactly what I did yesterday, Paul.
I know.
Don't worry
this
about
this
it.
This is like my accountant. You know what I mean?
It's a gut feel.
You're going to be paying through the nose, son. No, I would say that's a lot of yards, but that's 10 yards a carry with about 65. I'm going to say over, though. I mean,
okay.
This guy is – they didn't draft this guy to sit, and this is the new age running back. They're going to throw to him a lot. That's why I said under with the rushing attempts, because I don't think they're going to – they have other guys who can do that. You know, you can throw Wayne Gallman in for a series. You know, so I think under 18 rushing attempts, certainly something that could happen, but – they're going to throw this. You know, he's a three-down back, so first down, second down, third down, check down, any down. They're going to be throwing him the ball, so I like his rushing numbers to be very high.
Okay,
his pass catching numbers.
Got it. So in total, basically,
Well, touchdowns.
And
touchdowns.
Oh, yeah, and four receiving touchdowns.
Yeah, sure. Over.
Over.
Why not?
All right. Okay. So yeah. basically, you think he'll have more than 10 touchdowns from scrimmage because you had over on both touchdowns.
That's right. You did.
And you had over on both rushing yards and receiving yards. So you think he's going to have Paul, you think he's probably going to have 2,000 yards from scrimmage then, right? Give or take? If you have him over 1,200 yards.
I would say under 2,000, but not a lot under. I would say 1,800.
Okay. So, Paul goes.
Yeah, I mean, is assuming he's going to play all the
time. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, look, this is generational running backs. They're are not coddled. You know what I mean? And running backs don't need to, they don't need a lot of, growing space. They can flourish right away. This guy can flourish right away.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny, Paul? I had him for about 1,700 total yards from scrimmage, so we're really not all that
far off. We're on the same ballpark. I had him for
18. Somewhat in the same ballpark. And, you know, when the people at the Combine started throwing around pro comparisons and they were saying Marshall Faulk, Thurman Thomas,
Roger Craig.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Craig's not in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But the other two guys are. And Lord knows, if he is anything like those guys for a decade, I think the Giants will be very happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, and look, the word you just said is the word, a decade.
Yeah,
that was the big knock on a running back, right?
Right.
Is that he's going to be great for 5-6 years, and that's it. You know what I mean? We can take a defensive player, he can be great for a decade or more, which, you know, is statistically correct, but who the heck knows? You know what I mean? Who the heck knows who's going to be durable and who's not going to be? You know, it doesn't – there's no mathematical formula that can tell you that. But I'll tell you one thing, you know – he's 233 pounds. Marshall Faulk, on his best day, you know, it was 210 pounds
that's
or
right.
something.
You're
so,
right about that.
You know, look, I mean, it all adds up. If you spit out the numbers in a computer for what you want, it will spit out Saquon Barkley. Will it work? It should. Nobody knows, but, you're going to have to convince me why this guy's not going to be a really, really terrific player. You're going to have to give me, and I don't think anyone could even say that. The whole question is he going to be great and is he going to be durable? And that we don't know yet.
Paul, final question for me, and I got to throw this out there because I know you and I probably had more respect for Tiki Barber and his skill set than anybody in the New York media. Will he, by the time he is done, will Saquon Barkley match Tiki Barber's numbers for this franchise? And again, to refresh you, we're talking over 10,000 yards rushing. We're talking over 5,000 yards receiving. We're talking over 575 career receptions. By the time Barkley's done, will he have Tiki Barber-like career numbers for the Giants?
It's funny. I asked Tiki about this before the draft, and Tiki is a big Saquon Barkley guy, big Saquon Barkley guy. And he said, "Oh yeah, he said the Giants should take Barkley. There's no question about it." And I said, "You know, your records are going to go like." He said, "Well, so be it. He's going to break my records." You know, a couple things. Tiki played 10 years, right?
Yep.
And he was healthy and played 10 years, so that's a great.
But it wasn't full time for all those years.
But first 4 or 5 years of his career, he was I wouldn't say a part-time back, but he was a third-down back. He was
back.
In a rotation. You know, his Hall of Fame-type credentials happened at the back end of his career.
And he quit early.
They are not going to – it's not going to be a soft landing for Saquon. He's going to be jump right in. So if he plays a decade, he will shatter Tiki Barber's record.
And Paul, finally, I guess I should mention this before we say goodbye, and thank you for giving us all the time today. Rookie minicamp tomorrow. I'm going to burst a bunch of fans' bubbles and tell them – 4, 5, 6 of the draft class, or 4, 6 of the draft class, really not going to be able to see anything. You know, linebacker that can't hit, an offensive lineman that can't block anybody, a defensive lineman that can't tackle anybody. You aren't going to see much out of these guys, all right? You can see him run around, whoop-de-doo. But, you know, Barkley running around, then I think, to me, Kyle Ouellette is the exciting guy, to see his arm in person, you know, to see how he throws the football. What are you most looking forward to for our rookie minicamp next couple days?
Well, you're right. I mean, you know, how many times have we seen gone to training camp and gone to these camps and you see the running back, man, this guy looks good. This guy looks good, right? And it's like, yeah, well, they're brave. There's nobody wearing any pads and they're running around and, you know, they look good. And then the scrimmage comes and it's like, oh, man, this guy's not quite what we thought he was. I'm anxious. I mean, this day is always a very interesting day just to see those guys in the uniform, to see them. Look, it's more interesting to see them when the veterans, you know, for the veteran minicamp, certainly. But just seeing them, you know, seeing Saquon make a cut, seeing him up close and personal. And, yeah, Kyle Loletta will certainly be a guy. You know, I've seen him on TV. He broke my heart 2 years in a row playing for Richmond against my Albany Great Danes. Kyle Loletta played a total of 5 overtimes the last 2 years against Albany. Okay? And so, I mean, they had crazy games, and he always found a way to beat them. And so I'm anxious to see the size of him up close because, he's not a big guy, you know, and I want to see, like, how does he look? Does he look big? Does he look strong with the arm? I mean, he's a savvy guy, but as we all know, as savvy as he's going to be, he doesn't know the playbook yet. He's going to be throwing to guys who probably know less of the playbook than he does and being protected by guys who know even less of the playbook than any of them. So, you know, it's a mess, but
Paul,
you know,
I'm worried about you running onto the field trying to intercept him. That's what I'm worried about. In the name of Albany's defense, you're going to try to pick off one of his passes.
Look, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to shake his hand and say, nice to meet you, and say, I've rooted against you every time I've ever seen you on TV, every time I've seen you on my laptop. So, you know, he's going to have to prove himself to me, okay, because my first reaction of him is being a good quarterback at that level who ticked me off twice.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it, Paul.
All right, guys.
See you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow. Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. A couple things I took out of that. The way he talked about Algie Rosas, he's like the Dylan Betances of the New York Giants.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Big fastball, but maybe a little bit erratic. You don't know what you're going to get sometimes. So that was the comparison that popped into my head.
By the way, we're both huge Yankees fans, so I can relate to what you're saying.
And actually, I'm a bigger Betances fan than most people.
So
I think he's actually been better than people give him credit for this year. But that's one thing that popped in my head. Number two, Loletta is not the biggest guy. He's tall. Mm-hmm. But he's slender. He's not, you know, I think that's probably what he doesn't have the biggest arm. He doesn't have the biggest frame in the world. So I think seeing him in an outdoor setting, and, you know, you don't get a good feel for a guy, and even the evaluators say this. You want to see the guy throw in person, and it kind of gives you a different feel for what his ball looks and even sounds like as it cuts through the wind, and kind of look at, you know, how he spins it and things like that. So for me, rookie minicamp, I want to see Loletta, and to me, that's the most, you know, really. Biggest impression that'll be made on me because you really can't hit anybody. So,
well, the interesting part about what you said a moment ago of Loletta and his arm is that the weather is expected to be very good, as it has been most of the week. And so he won't be indoctrinated to the infamous Meadowlands winds as many kickers and quarterbacks usually have to experience when they get here to play for the Giants.
All right, let's get to the calls. 201-939-4513. Mike in Long Island waited through that whole interview. God bless you, Mike. Thank you very much for being part of the show. You have plenty of time. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
Well. Hey, I want to say something about Loretta, and then I have a Barkley and Odell prediction.
Sure.
Barkley, I have 1,113 rushing and 8 rushing touchdowns, and then 3 receiving touchdowns. And then 348 receiving yards with 270 carries.
I would increase your receiving yardage a little bit. I think you're a little bit on the low end, but I think your other numbers are pretty much where I thought they would be.
Fair enough.
So I total that's like 1,461 yards and 11 touchdowns. You know, I don't know how often do I get a lie on the running game now that we finally have one. You know, you have Ingram, Shepard, look at all these toys Eli has. I'm so excited.
Well, here's the thing. Last year, Shermer ran it 50% of the time with Minnesota.
Sure,
so
did.
I would expect the Giants will run the ball plenty.
As long as that line holds up and proves that they could do it,
right.
I think they'll try to get that ground game going.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited about the offensive line. I won so well, but, you know, we got Fulder. I was happy with. I'm happy with what went in there. Shout out to him. Follow me on Instagram. Thank you, Willie. You know, here's an interesting stat. 5 of the last 6 years in the NFC East, the team that finished last in the division turned it around and won it the next year.
You're
in
right.
2012. I mean, we're
I know.
Due, right?
It's
not losing the division.
Hey, Mike, your phone line's falling out a little bit. So if you have a little letter question, get it in now, and then Paul will answer both of them for you, okay?
All right. My question is arm strength. I saw a highlight yesterday. He threw a couple 50-yard bombs on the field. It was accurate. It was on point. You know, the ball
a lot of them
in the air. I mean, people question assumptions. I'm not worried. It's not like you have to have a Josh Allen on to see the NFL, right?
No, look, Mike, I agree, and thanks for the call. Your phone line's dying there on us. Yeah, I agree. I think he's a good enough arm to play in the NFL, but does he have a good as arm as, you know, some of the guys in the league that have the better arms? No, he doesn't, but that's fine. You can play with that, and yeah, he can throw an accurate deep ball, but I saw plenty of things on film where he underthrew deep balls and wasn't accurate on deep balls. So that's something he's going to have to work on. Nobody's a perfect prospect, especially someone you get in the fourth round, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, when people throw Chad Pennington's name out, they say he was a guy who didn't have a real strong NFL arm.
And I think Loletta's a better arm than Pennington.
And I think he does, too.
Yeah.
Because I think Loletta, I've seen him do it, and you're right, John, it's not always on the mark, but when it is, he can throw a very nice 55-yard toss, and he can hit it on a dime.
Sure he can.
But here's my bigger problem for the arm strength, and there's only one way to combat it. When you're talking about the 15, the 20-yard out, and you're talking about you got to zip that sucker, and the DB is anticipating the throw, and he can't wait to jump that route, and if you don't have enough mustard on it, he's going to get there and take it the other way for six. To me, it's those short tightrope throws, those laser beam throws.
Intermediate, not short. Intermediate throws.
Short to intermediate.
Well, I would say anything over 10 yards is intermediate, in
okay,
my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm. That's fair. That, to me, is where the arm strength becomes more dangerous. Now, there's one way you can combat that. And there's only one way to combat that besides accuracy.
Anticipation?
That is with timing.
Yeah.
Timing and anticipation.
Same thing.
It's the same thing. Slash, timing, anticipation. That is the only way you can combat the lack of zip on a medium range ball and succeed without getting yourself picked off. But that means your receiver and your QB have to be totally in symmetry.
Which, at a rookie minicamp, generally speaking,
won't happen.
You're probably not going to have that. Because basically, here's what happens. These guys come in. They say, "Hi, I'm Kyle. Nice to meet you, receiver number 12. I'm going to throw you some passes now, okay? Let's hope we figure this out quickly." That's basically how this goes.
It is.
Unless by some miracle some wide receiver from Richmond is ends up being on the rookie minicamp roster.
Who knows?
Or
if he threw with them at some off-season camp.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Odds are he's going to have to learn these guys pretty quick, and, you know, it's hard to anticipate that sort of stuff. Joe in Pennsylvania, he's up next. Joe, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you?
Hey, good. I'm just looking, you know, you guys are talking about, you know, what we need and how many questions, but that goes on everywhere. Look at New England this year, how many players they lose again, and they'll be all right, you know.
Look at their division. That's why they'll be all right.
And by the way, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick kind of helped that too, by the way.
Look at last year, all the questions the Eagles had with their defensive backs. I still don't know who they have on the defensive backs besides their safeties. And I'm saying, you look where we're at in our record last year, 3-11. But we gave the Eagles, they're the Super Bowl champions, everything in both games.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
Eagles weren't really trying in that last game, though, either. They didn't have anything to play for.
Yeah,
so
they weren't trying. We had guys off the street that was making their backfield look sick.
I know.
Eli Manning and him, and he did. Now, I don't care what. And there was the same guys in the defensive backfield that started in the Super Bowl and everything else.
They may not have had all the gusto that another
gusto
team may have had, but here's what I'm – Joe, here, I'm going to agree with you for the most part. I believe that the Giants – showed how vulnerable the Eagles can be, and Eli had his two best games against Philadelphia, certainly Gettleman and Shermer were well aware of that.
I mean, it wasn't just the Giants. The Patriots did have 600 yards of offense against them in the Super Bowl.
Now, last year we went 90% of the time, I think, three wide receivers. Would you say that's about correct? And I'm just wondering about how many this year we'd go two tight ends. What percentage of it?
I hope a lot.
Last year, I think single back, 11 personnel last year was probably around 70%, 60-70.
I was going to say probably
somewhere
around
in that
70.
Area, I would say. I would think more double tight end this year, but honestly, Joe, we haven't seen enough to be able to tell you. We're just guessing.
I would think if we're going to want to really run the ball, like they said, I would think, you know, and go play action – that's the key. And you really don't have to worry as much as people are worried about the third wide receiver, because Ingram and Barkley, along with Beckham and that, I mean, they can really make mismatches, because I don't think the two safeties are going to be, when against us, are going to be playing real deep anymore. I think they'll be coming up, especially if we go two tight end, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but Joe, remember this too. You don't have to play two tight ends to run the ball. I mean,
Joey, let me answer your question.
I
just think it's a good thing, and you can break them out now and then. Ingram White is right. You can. Or Barkley, you know.
No, but Joe, my point is, one of the best running teams in football last year, or the last couple years, the Dallas Cowboys, they ran 11 personnel more than any other formation, and they still are the best running team in the league. So there is an argument out there that it actually hurts you to put bigger personnel in the game to run, because the other team can go to their base defense. If you're an 11 personnel, you're forcing the defense to take a linebacker off the field, and you're dealing with five defensive backs. So it's an easier formation to run against. So I wouldn't get obsessed with personnel packages based on how you run the ball. The offensive line's got to block, okay? And the one tight end in the game's got to block. It doesn't matter if there's one or two of them on the field.
You know, the interesting thing, Joe, if you're going two tight ends, it's not your old traditional two tight end anyway, because what you could do is put Ellison on the line and you could put Ingram in the slot put him as an H-back.
Heck, you could put Ellison in the backfield if you want.
You could do that, too. Could run a ton of different styles of formation.
Good point.
Having two tight ends on the field.
So you can have the same personnel but different formations with that personnel.
I think that's where Shermer's going to make his money.
I agree 100%. I'm with you.
Right. And on a defensive side, I want to say something. I really think this year we have some linebackers that can be play all over the field, and that can cover the tight ends a little bit more. And I think that'll make a big difference in the defense. So that's all I want to say. Thanks for taking
my call.
Thank you,
Joe. Appreciate you calling on, as always, my friend. I mean, they only really
Ogletree's a three-down backer.
We don't even know who the other nickel linebacker is right now. Well, you think it's B.J. Goodson, but they're not handing him that job.
Well, he's got to stay healthy first.
Well, yeah, and he has to show that he can cover.
So Joe, I don't know if I totally am on board with you on that point, because right now Ogletree's the only proven three-down backer on this team.
How about this one, Paul? What if you go 11 personnel and you split Barkley out wide, and you empty set in 11 personnel?
I said that to you yesterday. Huh? You asked me about that. You said empty set. I said I could see some.
Well, no, I just meant in 11 personnel. You mentioned the formational versatility in 11. That's another different thing you can do.
No doubt. I think what Shermer should be able to do with this team is use a lot, especially if they're going to go with some of that hurry-up stuff, which he does do.
And Barkley and Ingram just give you a lot of versatility in how you line
all
them
of a sudden,
up.
It's like
Ellison.
And isn't that, in a way, isn't that exactly the opposite of Betcher? When Betcher has linebackers playing stand-up defensive end, he's got safeties playing linebacker. On the other side of the ball, that's what Shermer's going to do.
And by the way, you can have Ingram in the slot, Shepard outside, Shepard in the slot, Ingram outside. Heck, you can even put Odell in the slot if you want. There's a million different things you can do.
That's what I see. I see a very fluid offense and a very fluid defense where the traditional personnel positions will not be in play here.
Well, we'll see how they do. And again, this is all conjecture from Paul and I. We saw a little bit in voluntary minicamp.
Not nearly enough.
And we did see some empty backfield stuff, which is what I brought up yesterday. Yeah. But again, guys, this is just us kind of thinking, and, you know, Paul at home not sleeping at night on his yellow legal pad.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, drawing out formations, which I don't know that he does, but I kind of
sometimes
in my imagination.
Sometimes
he has a full pad at home with a bunch of plays with like Paul Dottino names, like they're all named after Springsteen songs or something like that, or like quotes from The Godfather. And that is the Paul Dottino playbook. This is the pepperoni pizza, you know. This is the cannoli.
I can't say I've named them that, but I probably should. I do have a bunch of diagrams on my desk at home. That is true.
That is a frightening place to be. Let's go to Jay all the way down in Oklahoma. Jay, what's going on, pal? How are you, man? Thanks for joining the show. We appreciate you calling in.
Hey, thanks. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you. The information
you guys put out is amazing.
Appreciate it.
But I am the voice of reason.
Okay.
For what's going on. Look, I am a Jersey guy living in cowgirl country, and now I can walk outside with my head held high because of what's going on. Think about it.
You got to play a couple games first, Jay.
A couple months ago, we were in the dark days. People need to sit back, take a breath, pump the brakes, enjoy the moment we're in. Like I said, a couple months ago, we were in the dark days. The organization, what do? They go out, get A. Even though he's from Boston, he has the New York attitude. He comes in there, he's unapologetic for anything he does. He has the courage of his conviction. I and Uncle Dave, I trust. Everybody calm down. Look, he brought in play leaders on every level of the team, if you really look at it. With, he's that type of uncle that he's not rich, but he knows how to manage his money. He brought in people that, you know, none of them are expensive, but they fit what we're trying to do. We're trying to change the culture. Everybody's like, bring in this player. We don't have the money. We still have to sign the draft picks. We got these undrafted free agents still out there. There's people going to be cut. Mm-hmm. Everybody calm down and enjoy the moment before it's gone.
Jay, I agree.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to give you a little unsolicited advice, okay? As someone who has gone watch Yankee games at Fenway Park, I understand the concept of being in enemy territory. I get it. Remember, the second game of the season, there's a pretty important game down in Dallas. You might want to just wait to see what happens in that game before you start talking too much.
No.
Just trying to help you.
You know what, John? I have a Dodge Ram 1500 with an Odell Beckham catch that I am going to clean up, and I am going right in the middle of that with everything. I am not scared. I can hold my head up high because I have
you.
A feeling this year is going to be great.
You know what?
I like the confidence.
I hate to rewind this, but in the interest of being honest, last year, I thought it was a blessing that the Giants played Dallas on opening day because I thought that was going to be a great way to kick off a potential Super Bowl season. It did not work out that way.
And this is also Dallas' home opener again this year, too.
I'm just letting you know.
It's not good.
No, I agree.
In the interest of honesty.
But I have hope.
I got you. Well, nothing wrong with hope.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Paul, think about you. You would know for sure. John, I don't know because I don't know your age, really. Think about the last time we drafted a player and there was so much hype about. You can't count Eli because we didn't draft him, and you can't count Odell because we really didn't know until the catch.
Yeah, that's true.
For me, it's Jeremy Shockey. I think there was quite a bit of buzz about Jeremy Shockey. They really, really wanted him. Ernie, of course, he made a trade to get up to get him a couple of picks. And when Shockey came in out of the Miami Hurricanes program, he was certainly viewed as one of these new-age tight ends who was going to have a big impact.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, before Shockey, do you know how I remember fans got really excited about this? He was from a big program, and he's – you know, usually it's only skill position guys people get excited for. People got really excited for Tyrone Wheatley, I feel like, when he got drafted. And they were really pumped to get him in here and kind of be the next big starting running back for the Giants. No?
But really, I'm going back.
I don't know.
You know, Dave Gettleman touched on it and said, this guy is touched by the hands of God. I'm not comparing him to this person because he is a God, but I'm going LT.
Well, you know, all right. Well, I appreciate the thought.
And thanks for the call.
And certainly, I don't think when the Giants fans got LT in the building, I don't think even they knew how great he was going to be the greatest defensive player who ever lived.
Way to represent Big Blue in
Oklahoma,
no doubt.
By the way. I do think there was a lot of hype on Ron Dane.
He
had won the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, you know what? You're right.
There was some hype on
Dane instead of Wheatley. You're right. You know? I should have went with Dane instead of Wheatley. That's a good point.
But Dane also wasn't, you know, a home run hitter. He wasn't, when he came out as a Heisman Trophy winner, he was viewed as more of a methodical statistical compiler,
right,
as opposed to a guy who's going to run 60 yards for a touchdown.
That year, I know I liked Sean Alexander better than Dane. Where did you sit on that?
I actually liked Alexander very much myself. But I was also, I must confess, I thought that Dane was actually the right pick for the Giants.
Okay.
And it didn't work out so well. Well, it did as a rookie, actually. Ran for over 700 yards, was a Thunder and Lightning combo with Tiki Barber, and they went to the Super Bowl that year.
I was a little young when it happened. I don't remember a big hubbub when Hampton got drafted because it was a later first-round pick.
Well, see what happened with Rodney Hampton. Rodney Hampton was one of the top five players on the Giants board that year.
But he had knee issues,
and,
right?
Well, he had a knee issue that nobody really knew about. Mm. And he dropped, and the Giants were shocked. And when he fell to them, obviously they took him because they had him as a top five talent.
All right, final call of the show. Charlie, we're late. I'm not going to play the open. Go ahead, pal. What do you got?
Hey, I just wanted to say Paul Schwartz. May the Schwartz be with you, because he was so right on about Eric Flowers, and I was so refreshing to hear somebody say it, the truth, that it was great to hear. And the only other thing I got for you guys is, Paul, we're going to have a couple of undrafted free agent tackles in. I know they're not going to be hitting anybody, but they can show you if they can move, if they can bend, if they can twist, if they can do some things. So take a look at a couple of guys I've heard that's coming in. I'm not saying for sure they are. Is Gates from Nebraska and Tyler Howell from Missouri.
Charlie, do you really think you have to tell Paul to watch the offensive line?
Well, but
come on.
Just to tweet out and say what he thinks.
Okay.
I know you're not hitting
Charlie, I have done extensive film work on all tentative folks who have been attached to the franchise via the internet. And who knows if they will or will not be here. That's not for me to
say.
But
Paul, we're ready for them if they are.
Homework is already on the board. Trust me.
All right. Well, just let me know how they look to you. You're not going to miss the guy from Missouri because he's like 6'8", 330 pounds.
If he is, I'm sure he will dwarf many other folks on the field.
He certainly will.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Appreciate it. Call back when we get a chance. We got to run.
Show's
over. Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate the call as always, my friend. Just call back if you want to make another point.
Trust me, though, Charlie. You will get a full report on whoever the offensive tackles are who come in during the course of the next couple of days. I will be all over it.
And again, you're not going to be able to tell a whole lot out of minicamp,
unfortunately. You can't. But I will be studying film extensively of their college days to get a good grade. Go ahead.
That's it. I'm going to say goodbye.
I'm done.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Tomorrow it's Lance and Fiegels. Paul and I will be doing media. I think Shermer tomorrow is Coach Shermer's at 11?
11:30,
and then player availability after that. So
yes.
Paul and I will be taking care of that. We'll have a report after practice on what happened. And then, of course, we'll have coverage of everything else at minicamp as well throughout the day on Friday and on Saturday. Late practices, by the way, 3:30 to 5:30 both days, if memory serves. So you have to be a little patient. But
not open, by the way.
No, not open to the public. So by the time you get to early evening, we should have a lot of our content up from those practices. So make sure you go to Giants.com to check that out. In the meantime, for Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for being with us on Big Blue Kickoff Live on this Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.